thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. Our wholehearted appreciation going out to the Duffy Brothers and all those who helped make A Country Ramble such a big part of WISO's history. It's going to be a great show tonight at 6, so make sure you tune in for that. And thanks for joining us this morning. Later in the program, we've got Dayton Youth Radio and Culture Couch. Up first, a dance company is more than graceful bodies moving across a stage. It's also the people behind the scenes making sure the artists can create. Community Voices producer Jocelyn Robinson brings us a story from the Dayton Contemporary Dance Company.
Half a century. That's how long the Dayton Contemporary Dance Company has been presenting dance rooted in the African-American experience. DCDC has weathered the ups and downs of the performing arts in a small Midwestern city for a long time.
We are 50 years old. That means we're grown up. That means that we have some wisdom. We have some knowledge. We have, I think, great experience behind us, but an even brighter future in moving forward.
That's Ronita Haas-Saunders, Chief Executive Officer of the Dayton Contemporary Dance Company. Since 2009, the company has been located at the Central State University Dayton campus in a sprawling building on Germantown Street. It was the home of Reynolds & Reynolds before they moved their operations to Kettering. With extensive renovations, like raising the ceilings so the dancers could rehearse lifts, there's now a hum of creative energy coming from both the studios and professional offices. Everyone, from the dancers to the tour coordinator, from the costume designer to the grant writer, is hard at it. Haas-Saunders has been the company's CEO for the past 13 years, and when she arrived, she was one of only 3 administrative staff. Today, there's a staff of 12, along with 13 dancers and an annual budget of near $1.4 million.
That's a lot of money, and we don't get, and people are not aware of this, we don't have a major national organization that just writes us a check or a guaranteed grant every year. We have to raise that amount of money in this community each and every year.
Early on, one of her challenges was raising DCDC's visibility here in the Dayton area.
We could go to Detroit and have a sold-out house. We could go to a large city and people know who we are. But it was not as prevalent for folks to just know about DCDC in the way that I thought that they would and could and should here in the Miami Valley. So we've worked very, very hard.
But a dance company doesn't run on ticket sales alone. To generate more revenue, Haas-Saunders forged an innovative business model based on dance education.
This was something that I really felt was necessary in order for us to be able to sustain ourselves because of the challenging economy. So what I wanted to do was to have strong partnerships with Wright State University, the University of Dayton, Central State University. And so the change of moving from on Main Street downtown to the Central State University Dayton campus was something that was a major change.
This strategy has paid off. Not only does the company now have its own studios and offices, but during this 50th anniversary year, DCDC has had the resources to premiere new works on stage, travel to historically black colleges and universities for residencies, and mount tours to China, Kazakhstan, and Russia, even selling out a performance at the Bolshoi Theater in Moscow.
And so I think being 50 years old and being from the birthplace of aviation allows us to be able to stand tall and to say, look at what we've been able to create and do and be here in Dayton, Ohio.
But DCDC is not alone in spreading the gospel of black dance. It's alive and well in major cities throughout the U.S. And this month, some of the very biggest names in black dance are coming to Dayton for the annual conference of the International Association of Blacks in Dance, including the Dance Theater of Harlem and Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. DCDC's late founder, Geraldine Blendon, was also one of the founders of the IABD, and today her daughter, Debbie Blendon Diggs, the company's artistic director, is on the association's board.
Even though DCDC is firmly rooted in Dayton, Ohio, and we are proud to be. We carry the Dayton name everywhere we go. We're a global company. And if you come and participate on any level, even if it's just the performances, you will get a really wonderful insight of where DCDC sits on a national, international, and global level in the contemporary dance world. because we want Dayton to be as proud of it as we are. And so, you know, join us. Come see.
From January 22nd through the 27th, the International Association of Blacks in Dance Conference will gather over 800 dancers and administrators from all over the world for panel discussions, masterclasses, auditions, and performances at venues throughout Dayton. For Culture Couch at WYSO, I'm Jocelyn Robinson.
Visit DCDC.org for more information about the company's special 50th anniversary events, which will continue through the spring. Culture Couch is made possible by a generous grant from the Ohio Arts Council. Addiction devastates millions of Americans, and shaking off its grip is extremely hard. Earlier this year, Side Effects Public Media asked people in recovery to share their stories at a live event in Indianapolis. We're sharing them in a series called Sober, Voices of Recovery and Hope. This story from Dwight Fortune shows us that addiction reaches into all parts of our society.
I didn't have that regular story that you may think you hear about an addict, where they grew up with a troubled home, abusive parents, drugs and alcohol all around. That was not my story. My life was awesome. All through high school and into college, I was a great athlete. Got a full scholarship to go to college, the D1 school to play baseball. I graduated with an opportunity to go play pro ball. I graduated with honors in high school and from college with a degree in accounting. When I graduated, I had opportunity, as I said, to go play pro ball, but I decided to go work for the government as an accountant. I was working there, and I decided, this isn't what I want to be. I had these grand dreams of how I wanted to create my life, what it wanted to look like. I wanted to be wealthy, successful. I wanted to be in the top four. I wanted to be on Forbes. That's what I wanted. So I started buying real estate, and I started getting more successful in real estate. I started partying even more. And here I am with a little more money, a little more success, and my addiction is growing, and I got more money until about 9 years after I graduated from college. It's about 2011, and I'm sitting in front of a judge because I had failed probation once again, and I had to figure out how to get out of over 200 days of jail time, and it worked. The judge gave me 45. But before he gave me that 45-day sentence, he said to me, "You are too smart for your own good." Shoot, I got a 45-day sentence out of 200. I took that as a compliment. It worked. But here's the problem. Because I thought I was too smart for my own good, I wasn't really ever dealing with the problem. So 2 years later, in 2013, I get in trouble three times for the same crime on three different occasions. Three felony convictions means three strikes rule. I should have got the full brunt of what the court could have sentenced me to. But for some reason, God saw fit for me to give me another opportunity. So again, we went through this whole thing with the court system and got me into a reentry program that was going to allow me to get in some recovery, and then it was going to dismiss all three of those charges. So come about the seventh month, I'm about to go to court again. I'm like, today's the day. So I have this green folder. And in the green folder, I have on one side of it, I have all the programs I've been into, the recovery stuff, the men's ministry, the parenting classes I've been in. On the left side, I have all these letters and things that I've been working on, my psychology and all my emotions and so forth, that I'm writing and talking about the Bible study that I was leading while I was in jail. Like, I had this whole case put together to present to the judge. This is going to be the day. It's perfect. I'm ready. And then I walk into the courtroom. When he finished, he asked the prosecution, "Are you ready to proceed?" They says, "No, Your Honor, we must continue it again." I didn't even get a chance to present this case that I put together. They take me back to my dorm room, and as I'm walking in, I'm visibly upset. I said, "God, you and I need to talk, man. I'm mad at you. We need to talk. You need to tell me what's going on. Why am I still here?" I got quiet and I waited because I needed an answer. What I heard was, "You weren't ready." And for some reason, I was willing to accept it that day. But a couple months later from that, I was released from jail. I got into that reentry program, successfully completed it, and I've been clean ever since. Now, I say all this because the thing about me and addiction is that I thought I was smart enough to outthink the judges, to outthink the legal system, to outthink my addiction. But addiction doesn't care about your pedigree. I had to find something greater than everything that I gave. Because what I know is that I have to give my best and let God handle the rest. You see, I stand before you a grateful recovering addict. With that, I hope this has been helpful to someone.
This story was produced by Matt Pelser from Side Effects Public Media, a news collaborative covering public health in the Midwest. Once again, thanks for joining us. This is WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO.
The Moth Radio Hour mixes humorous and heartbreaking tales told with honesty, bravery, and wit. Those true stories told live are recorded at Moth Mainstage events all over the country, and WISO is bringing the Moth Mainstage to Dayton. Five master storytellers will take the stage of the intimate Victoria Theater on April 11th. Tickets are on sale now at TicketCenterStage.com. Thanks to our presenting sponsors, Yellow Springs Brewery, supporters of True Stories Told Over a Great Beer, and Sinclair College.
I'm Juliet Frumhold. Join me on a musical journey every Sunday night on Alphorithms. We'll go far out to the edges of space, time, and genre and make it back home before the weekend is over. Come along, Sunday nights from 8 to 11 on Alphorithms on WYSO.
I feel the liftoff. The clock has started. Roger.
This is WISO Weekend on WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. It's widely known that illness can shape a person's life both before and after a diagnosis. With that in mind, here's Dayton Youth Radio Project Coordinator Basim Blunt to introduce today's story about one young person's experience with it.
Things shrink when a person is sick. They're in the house, in their bedroom, or maybe even a hospital bed. But today's student learned that living in a small world has given him wide dreams.
Growing up, I've spent all of my time invested in school and my studies. For my family, I was always forced to complete any homework right after school and to place education above all else. I've even received acceptance for a couple of full-ride college scholarships. But none of it has been easy. High school isn't a piece of cake. I've been battling with health issues for 5 years now. At the age of 11, I started feeling very unwell. I had headaches, stomach aches, and back pain. It got so bad I had to ask my mom to finally take me to the family doctor. Eventually, I had to see a gastroenterologist and a neurologist to rule out any possible illnesses. One of my worst memories was going to the neurologist and getting injections in the back of my neck in order to try to numb the spinal cord and to stop my migraines. After 5 years of doctors and misdiagnoses, I was finally told that I have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome and fibromyalgia. Both of these limit my day-to-day mobility and what exactly I can do. Around this time, I stopped hanging out with people. I had to stay in a lot, and I began watching the entire Grey's Anatomy series. The concept of saving lives was beyond fascinating. When things start to get better and when I finally found myself getting out of bed, one of the first people that I hung out with was Andrew.
The first time we met was in freshman English class. It was like the last 2 weeks of school, and I was changed from sixth period to eighth period, and I sat right in front of you.
I remember going over to your house just to show you Grey's Anatomy. Like, that was one of the main things that I ended up doing, and I showed you so many scenes from that show, and I just kept talking on and on and on about how much I loved it, and I know you probably had to be getting so tired of it.
I think the worst part about having to watch you go through all this pain was seeing how much it took a toll on your mental state. the issue that you have with, you know, your joints and your muscles isn't something that I hear about every day, especially not with young people. And it just, it made me think of you in a very different light, and it made me see how strong you are.
One thing that really helps me stay positive and get through this is the idea of what I want to do after high school. Obviously, talking about the medical field and Grey's Anatomy has always been of interest to me, but so is engineering. What I want to go into is prosthetic designs for kids. I hope that through doing this, I can give them a better experience in the hospital than what I've had. You know, because there's nothing worse than the first time going to the hospital. And I think that with kids especially, it's something that I could help try to soothe the process of and try to be, you know, a friendly face to some of them. That's just really important to me. There's nothing that's impossible. And I feel like this was my impossible situation, and I got through it. For Dayton Youth Radio at Stiver School for the Arts, this is Daniel Cheek.
That was The Remedy, written and produced by Daniel Cheek, a senior from Stiver School of the Arts. Special thanks to Leslie Rogers and Eva Maxtudis. You can hear more stories from this series by visiting WYSL.org or subscribing to our podcast on iTunes and on Stitcher. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Basim Blood.
Support for Dayton Youth Radio comes from the Virginia W. Kettering Foundation and the Ohio Arts Council. Well, we're almost a month into the new year, and by now, thousands of Ohioans should be seeing a slight bump in their paychecks. That's because a state law passed over a decade ago that requires the minimum wage to keep up with a cost of living measure called the Consumer Price Index. In economist speak, this is called indexing to inflation, and Ohio is among several states that do it. But as Adrian Ma from Ohio Public Radio, member station WCPN, explains, an indexed minimum wage, like the economy itself, has its ups and downs.
Any cookies, chips, or drinks for you today?
It's just after 3 o'clock, and Fantasia Pettis is wrapping up her shift at a Subway sandwich shop in downtown Cleveland.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right.
She clocks out, takes some change from the tip jar.
All right, see you.
And heads out the door.
I love my job because I love the people that I work with. They make it really easy. Basically, they're kind of like family for real.
Pettis makes Ohio's minimum wage, now $8.55 an hour. And even though it was automatically raised by 25 cents on January 1st, she says,
I feel like it's still not enough. Just because it went up a quarter, I mean, you could find a quarter on the walking down the street.
We do some quick math and find the raise comes to about 43 extra bucks a month before taxes.
Is $43, what does that mean to you?
A phone bill.
When I ask the 25-year-old whether she feels she's getting by, she shrugs. After bills and groceries, chipping in for her dad's medical expenses, she says she's barely making it.
Minimum wage, really, it's a struggle.
Not only does she have trouble meeting basic expenses, but according to the Consumer Price Index, those basics are getting more expensive, about 2.2% higher than last year. Ben Zipper with the Progressive Economic Policy Institute says this is where wage indexing comes in handy.
So, you know, if the cost of groceries, gasoline, housing goes up by X percent in Ohio, the minimum wage that following year is going to go up by the same percent.
Unlike the federal minimum wage, which has been stuck at $7.25 for years.
Tying these increases so that there's some kind of automatic process makes them much more predictable, makes them much easier to plan around.
Not just for workers, he says, but also for employers.
I think the minimum wage is going to keep on increasing, and we should try to keep it up with, you know, the cost of living.
That's Alex Gleason. He manages a bar in Cleveland's Ohio City neighborhood called the Old Angle Tavern. He says his employees actually get more than Ohio's minimum wage. And if that rate increases just a couple percent each year, it'll be a while before his business feels any pressure. He says what really concerns him is talk of a $15 minimum wage. According to the progressive think tank Policy Matters Ohio, that would mean a raise for about 1.8 million Ohio workers, many of whom have children. But Gleason says it would be tough on the service industry.
It's a very low profit margin business, so that would be a big deal for businesses that are barely getting by.
And Aparna Mater with the Conservative American Enterprise Institute says a wage hike that large could backfire.
Because you could find that those same employers are now less likely to hire new minimum wage workers, or they're less likely to keep existing workers on the job.
Or employers might replace those workers with machines. Now, all that said, if inflation stays relatively low, 2-3%, Mater says
employers can offset some of those hikes by passing on the cost to consumers. The employment effects are likely to be minimal.
The benefit of an automatic increase, says Zipper from the Economic Policy Institute, is that when the cost of living goes up, so will the minimum wage. But what if that's still not enough for a person to live on?
Well, if you don't raise the minimum wage to an appropriate level to begin with, indexing kind of locks it into that level.
According to MIT's living wage calculator, a single adult in Ohio needs to earn about $10.47 an hour just to stay a step above the poverty line. The state's current minimum wage is nearly $2 short of that. For Ohio Public Radio, I'm Adrian Ma.
For more news on the economy, arts, and local happenings here in the Miami Valley, visit our website at wyso.org. Also, check out our programming schedule if you're not yet familiar with everything that WISO has to offer. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Wells Almanac for the transition week from deep winter to late winter, and the third week of the squashy Osage moon, and the first week of the sun in Aquarius. By this point in January, enough small changes have accumulated, in spite of severe weather, to move the season into late winter. The anteroom to early spring, growing the birdsong that will fill the mornings of March and rousing small mammals to courtship. Now comes the close of the windfall seeding. The evergreen winterberry vines and the bittersweet vines have completed their planting. Hawthorn berries give way. Overwintering robins eat and scatter the crabapples. Juncos cluster readying for migration north. Often riding the winds of thaw, flocks of starlings leave cutover fields to cluster in town, sometimes accompanied by the robins and blackbirds. Tufted titmice call most every morning, and precocious male cardinals cry out to set their territories before sunup. Owls lay eggs. Skunks and opossums look for mates. And in order to try to understand the dramatic effects of these events, in order to turn the lean narrative of late January into spring, I have to look between the lines and drift off a little as I read the signs. Having experienced spring before, reliving it through memory, I anticipate and fantasize. I tell a new and an old story, stepping from one marker to another, trying to make sense. I try to fashion the landscape according to my daydream. Then the season becomes an imaginary personal projection, a reconfiguration of past time into time to come. This is Bill Felger with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the first full week of late winter and the final week of the squashy Osage moon. In the meantime, read the signs and remember all the things about to happen.
Bill Felger contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
And that's it for this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world, thanks to generous listeners like you. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10. Coming up on WYSO, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.